a lot of the new information that we've been examining since January 6th is consistent with a larger trend that we've seen over the last decade or two, right? Which is both a qualitative and a quantitative transformation in domestic extremism. This is largely driven by the growth of what we would call right-wing extremism in terms of events perpetrated by white supremacists, anti-government extremists, other kinds of xenophobic extremists, that kind of thing. So if you look at in terms of this, in terms of terrorist attacks, for example, I believe in the first decade, you know, 2000, 2010, there was an average of just about 6 right-wing terrorist attacks per year. And that number jumped substantially to 22 in the last decade. So this is a trend that we've been seeing for a long time. I think what in the last couple of years we've seen that's especially concerning and that has driven a lot of the most recent events is the growth of disinformation and conspiracy theories as a central animus to these kinds of events.
One of the things I'd like to ask specifically about is this disinformation component, because in talking with some of your colleagues in the last year or two, it was pointed out to me that a lot of folks who are in this, I guess, domestic extremism ecosystem engage with disinformation operators, and they're not even aware that that's what's happening, that they're being fire hosed with disinformation. Are you seeing the same thing?
Yeah, I think fire hosed is not a terrible way to describe that, actually. And I think one way to envision this is really just an entire ecosystem of disinformation, right? So, you know, I hear a lot of people say, well, people just need to do their research. They need to, you know, not just accept uncritically information that they hear. But the thing is that this entire ecosystem is so developed and so multi-layered that if you believe some piece of disinformation, you can find confirmation of that disinformation from myriad sources. So that's a real challenge for people trying to counter disinformation and also for individuals just trying to figure out what's accurate.
Yeah, and the information bubble is something I've also heard people talking about too, that getting in that place where everything you want to hear, you can confirm it. And, you know, and some people just don't want to get out of it. They call it a rabbit hole. You know, a lot of QAnon subscribers have come out since, I guess, the last year or so and said, hey, you know, I lost my family, I lost my home, I lost my job because of this disinformation. Does that, based on what you've seen, drive people to commit acts of terrorism?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the vast majority of people, I think it's important to point out, who adhere to these beliefs are not people who have committed violent acts based on them or ideologically motivated crimes even. But over 100, for example, people who adhere to the QAnon conspiracy and the wild radical beliefs therein, over 100 people affiliated with that movement have committed illegal crimes that are ideologically motivated. So, you know, it is certainly a minority of believers, but it is... It's not surprising that there has been this pool of people committing these crimes. And I think, you know, as that pool of people who believe it grows, then likely we'll continue to see more violence and or crime associated with it. But on the ecosystem and on the bubble image that you described, I think it's important to point out that one of the major problems in the last few years is that some of this disinformation has come from political leaders and community leaders. And so it's not just limited to people who maybe have a particular interest. It's coming from people who should be sources of authority in society. And so that is a transformation that's been very difficult.
Is this growing quickly, or how is it growing? How would you describe the growth trend?
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts about that. I mean, it's always really hard to project the future, and we are academic researchers, and so we're actually always a little bit behind in collecting real-time data on these trends because, you know, we want to be really sure. We want to, you know, we wait for court records to come out and that kind of thing. So it's a little bit difficult to say, but I think, you know, observers in this field, we can all identify a couple of trends that I think are going to change the way that we see and address domestic extremism in the future. And they're kind of from different perspectives. But one is, we may continue to see a continuing trend in the growth of mass casualty attacks. And that is very concerning. And of course, it's, you know, the most devastating attacks are ones that are perpetrated against, many people at once. That was not something that we saw in the domestic extremism sphere very much, with a couple of exceptions over time. But that has just been a radical transformation in the tactics of right-wing extremists, especially white supremacists. This is, it's sort of a cultural component of this extremist culture here. There, it's become something that individuals aspire to. And it is a reflection of the radicalization of the movement, whereby they're no longer interested in working through the system or working through institutional tactics. The people involved in this kind of extremism are ones who see the need for a complete revolution, a complete dissolution of the existing system. And so these kinds of terrorist attacks are meant, yes, to scare the victims and the potential victims and the targets, but they're also meant to have this chaotic reaction whereby society itself, society, people in society broadly, you know, see their community and their society as unstable, and then begin to lose faith in the political and social institutions that we have. So I think that that is, it's widely lauded among extremists in this area and this network, and they're going to continue to perpetrate that kind of trend. The other is sort of from a different direction, the continuing localization of extremist tactics. And so you've seen, for example, Proud Boys showing up at local county meetings and that kind of thing to intimidate individuals at school board meetings. That, you know, that is something that certainly has happened in our political sphere over decades. But this movement from the sort of national mobilization to the hyper-local is something that I think we're going to continue to see as, again, it sort of becomes a known tactic among extremists.
Dr. Elizabeth Yates is a senior researcher with a START program at the University of Maryland. J.J. Green, WTOP News.